So, modular invariance, of course, is the crossing equation for the torus partition function in two dimensions. And I want to discuss constraints from this equation on the space of two-dimensional CFTs. So the problem of, this is the problem of modular bootstrap. And generally,
what about the video?
Video? There we go. Okay, so generally the question, the problem of modular bootstrap is broad. It's just to understand what this equation tells us about the space of CFTs and all of the, to find all of the information that we can extract from it. But in particular, there's one simple question that we can ask, which has been the focus of a lot of the effort in modular bootstrap. And that's the question, given the central charge C, or more generally, given the chiral algebra of your conformal field theory, what is the maximum delta 1? Delta 1 is the scaling dimension of the first primary. So this is the simplest question that you can try to ask, or one of the simple questions you can try to ask with modular bootstrap. You can also ask other questions. In the case, so we'll also be talking about gravity. So for central charge much bigger than 1, this becomes a problem of understanding constraints on quantum gravity in 3 dimensions in ADS3. So for C much greater than 1, this is related to 3D gravity. And the problem of finding the bound on the lowest primary is in that language the problem of understanding what the constraints of the UV completion are on the low energy theory of gravity in 3 dimensions. So in particular, does it have to have any states at low dimensions, or how heavy can we make them? So in this talk, I want to tell you what we know about delta 1 analytically. There are both numerical and analytic constraints come from modular bootstrap, and I will tell you about the analytic ones. So let me start by setting up the bootstrap problem here in detail. So the first, I'm going to restrict to the locus tau equals minus tau bar. And it's the reason for this is purely because we can make progress in this limit. It's not that there are no constraints from general tau and tau bar, but this becomes both analytically and numerically easier. This is the analog in correlator bootstrap of studying the locus z equals z bar. It's important that I don't mean that tau is purely imaginary. I'm allowing tau and tau bar to be complex while keeping this relation. Then the partition function can be expanded in characters. Delta is the scaling dimension, rho is a positive degeneracy, chi delta is the character of the algebra. So by setting tau equals to minus tau bar, I've discarded the spin information in the partition function. And the precise form of chi will depend on the symmetry of the theory. So in the most general case of 2D CFT, the symmetry is just Virasoro on the left and right. And in that case, chi delta is q to the delta minus c over 12. Over product over k, 1 minus q to the k squared. So on the top, I should define q. Q is e to the 2 pi I tau. So on the top, we see the scaling dimension of the operator, and then this product on the bottom is accounting for the descendants. It's squared because they're descendants both from left and right moving Virasoro algebra. And this can be packaged into an eta function. So this is delta minus c minus 1 over 12 over eta of tau squared. So this is the most general case with the most generic symmetries. By the way, I've dropped the fact that the vacuum has additional null states. I don't want to keep writing that, but we're in the back of our minds that's there. It won't really affect anything that I have to say. So another case that's going to be important for us is the chiral algebra. U1 to the C times U1 to the C current algebra. So this is the chiral algebra of C free bosons, but I'm not assuming the theory is free, just that these are the symmetries. So there's a current algebra on the left and a current algebra on the right. In this case, the character I delta is U to the delta over eta to the 2C. Okay, so in this case, we have lots of additional descendants coming from all those currents, and that just gives this simple character. So the first step, as usual in the functional approach to the bootstrap, is to write down the crossing equation and act on it with a linear functional. So in this case, our crossing equation is the sum over delta, rho delta, chi delta of tau, minus chi delta of minus 1 over tau is equal to 0. And then we're going to act on this with a linear functional, which I'll call big F. And when we act on this crossing equation with a linear functional, we get a sum rule. It takes the form sum over delta, rho delta, F of delta is equal to 0. The Fs that show up here are not any old Fs. They're the Fs that you can make by linear functionals. But by designing F according to your wishes, you can try to then derive constraints on a conformal field theory. In particular, this is where you can get bounds on delta 1. I think everyone's familiar with this, but I'll say it quickly. So rho is positive. So if you can find a function F that's mostly positive, then you conclude that the spectrum has to have some support where F is negative. Okay, so this can constrain where those dimensions can be. And by designing an appropriate F, you can derive bounds on the first scaling dimension. So this is the usual functional bootstrap that we talk about for correlators. The application to modular bootstrap was initiated by Hellerman and extended by various groups. So the results of this, applying this method to modular bootstrap, I'm going to summarize by the following picture. So in scaling dimension, we put 0 down here. Then in the initial paper, Hellerman derived a bound C over 6 on the first scaling dimension. So he showed that there has to be some state below C over 6. There's a hint from 3D gravity that C over 12 is important. And that's because that's where the lowest dimension BTZ black holes show up in the spectrum of 3D gravity at large central charge. But so far, the bounds have not reached the BTZ threshold. The best numerical bound that we have at this point is around here. It's C over 9.1, approximately, in the large C limit. And the best analytic bound which is what I'll talk about today, is at C over 8. Well, actually, the bound I'm going to talk about is, I'm mostly going to talk about is a bound at C over 8 plus a half. The best analytic bound is actually slightly better than this, and I'll come back to that later, but I'll start with a simpler one. So this is the situation, and I want to focus on this analytic bound and tell you where it comes from. So before I get into that, let me motivate why some reasons to bother with this particular bootstrap problem. So there are various reasons, some of them holographic and some of them purely CFT. So one reason that I like this bootstrap problem is because we want to solve 3D gravity. And the modular bootstrap, it gives us a way of constraining the spectrum of black holes and using the spectrum of black holes to constrain the theory in the infrared. Okay, so the kinds of questions that I'd like to possibly be able to answer with modular bootstrap are things like, does 3D gravity require strings? Or something like strings. Does 3D gravity require extra dimensions? How big can they be? So these are constraints. These are questions about the infrared spectrum of the theory that could potentially be constrained by consistency in the UV. And these questions we haven't yet really been able to address using bootstrap, but maybe we can. And the simplest place to try to do that is in three dimensions. The second reason is that we need to learn how to bootstrap heavy operators. So I think this is really one of the broad goals of bootstrap over the next few years, is to understand how to do, how to constrain, or how to put together the constraints on the light spectrum with constraints on the heavy spectrum. In particular, this is important for holography, but it's also important just for ordinary conformal field theory. Say the Ising model, where we need to understand how to bootstrap things at finite temperature and finite density. Maybe even in the hydrodynamic regime, where we can start to ask questions about transport. Finally, the modular bootstrap is in some sense the simplest bootstrap problem. It's a setting where we can test out ideas and methods. Because it's sort of, the blocks are particularly simple, and the crossing kernel in this case is actually just a Fourier transform, which is the simplest possible crossing kernel. So it sort of disentangles two of the difficult problems in bootstrap. One problem of understanding the blocks, and then the other problem of understanding this functional bootstrap equation. In this case, the blocks and the crossing kernel is just as simple as it could be, and we can focus on what we can learn about this equation. Okay, so as indicated in the title, this bound is going to come from a connection between this bootstrap problem and the problem of sphere packing. So sphere packing is a math problem, which I'll describe and review. But before I do that, I want to mention a hint that there has to be something interesting going on with the modular bootstrap that's going to have some kind of analytic answer. And that hint comes from numerics at certain special values of the central charge. So in particular, at C equals 12, you can run the numerical bootstrap, and you find the bound delta 1 is less than or equal to 2 plus 10 to the minus 30. Okay, so this is done numerically. Integers play no role whatsoever in the setup here. They just come out magically when you do this calculation, and the longer and longer you run the optimization, the more this seems to approach towards the integer 2. So that's really a surprise, because nowhere did we put integers into this problem. When you optimize these functionals, you not only get a bound, you also get a candidate spectrum. And at C equals 12, the candidate spectrum that you get to very good numerical accuracy seems to be the J function that is familiar in modular forms. So this is just a numerical fact, but it's begging for an analytic explanation. And part of what I'm going to do is explain where this comes from. Questions so far? We could do questions. Everyone is very quiet. Okay, so the sphere packing problem is what is the maximum density of spheres in Rn, that is identical non-overlapping spheres. This is a problem that mathematicians have studied for hundreds of years, literally. So why do they care about this? The reason that they care about this is because it seems to connect to all sorts of other interesting problems. So it connects to number theory, group theory, theory of lattices, and information theory. In fact, this problem of packing spheres is even relevant for technology. The E8 sphere packing that I'll reference either currently is, or I'm not sure if it currently is, but at some point has been used in actual physical devices like cell phones and modems to transmit information over a noisy channel. So this is something that just connects to all sorts of other things, and it seems to have an interesting answer. So what is the story? So this problem, in general, is unsolved, but it's solved in a few special dimensions. In two dimensions, the answer is the A2 root lattice. So this is the triangular lattice, and I've drawn it over here. So this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to take identical spheres and pack them, leaving as little room as possible. In this case, the answer turns out to be a lattice, but that's not put in as an assumption. That comes out as an output. In particular, in higher dimensions, it's believed that the best sphere packings are not lattice packings. In n equals 3, in the A2 case was proved a long time ago. In n equals 3, the solution of the sphere packing problem is the face-centered cubic lattice. So this is known as the Kepler problem because this conjecture was made by Kepler a very long time ago and finally proved by Hales about 20 years ago in a really serious effort that took many people over many years to come up with this proof. The proof is hundreds of pages long and involves using a computer to check tens of thousands of special cases, eventually this proof was verified and accepted and made Hales quite famous for this result. So it came as a big surprise. Yeah, so the maximal density is the density of the FCC lattice. But it's not unique. That's right. So it came as a big surprise when the case n equals 8 was solved in a beautiful paper by Wiazowska in 2016. So she proved that the E8 lattice is the optimal packing in 8 dimensions. And she proved this using some technology that I'll, of Cohn and Elke's that I'll describe. In fact, it was known, it was basically known numerically that this was the case, but she finally found the proof. This proof was very quickly extended to 24 dimensions. In fact, a week later, with some additional collaborators, they proved that the optimal packing in 24 dimensions is the Leech lattice. Okay, so I want to describe in detail what Wiazowska did and how this connects to the bootstrap. First of all, without loss of generality, we can consider a periodic packing.
Hi, Tom. So in n equal 8, n equal 24, is there an analog of this phenomenon from n equal 3 when there are other solutions which have the same density but not regular lattices?
I think the answer is no. The answer is no. So periodic packing is defined by a lattice lambda in Rn and a unit cell U, which is just a list of vectors, say n of them. So a periodic packing is basically a crystal. It's a you arrange a few spheres however you like, and then you tile that arrangement over all of space. This is more general than a lattice, which would have to include all the translates of each individual sphere. This just includes all the translates of the unit cell. So we include spheres at these positions in the unit cell, and then we translate over all of Rn. I'm going to scale the volume of my unit cell, the volume of my lattice to be n, the number of spheres in my unit cell. Since I've fixed the scaling of the lattice, that means that in order to maximize the density of the sphere packing, what we're really trying to do is to maximize the radius of the spheres that we can fit into this configuration. So we're looking for periodic packings with a large distance between the closest two points. This is without loss of generality because the because you can approximate any packing by a periodic packing, and the error is just a boundary term, an edge effect that goes away if you take the unit cell to be large. We're not assuming anything about the packing. It could be completely disordered, but we can use these periodic packings to place density bounds. So Wiazowska's proof of the of optimality of E8 relies on an earlier result of Cohn and Elke's. So the Cohn Elke's theorem from 2003 is the connection to bootstrap. So I want to describe to you this theorem. I'm going to describe it in sort of bootstrap language, although this isn't how they originally describe it in the paper. So let me define a partition function for a sphere packing. The partition function is the sum over all of the distances, is summed over all the all pairs of spheres in the packing. The definition is that we sum x in the lattice, we sum ui and uj in the unit cell of e to the I pi tau x plus ui minus uj squared. I'm going to put in, for later convenience, a factor of eta of tau to the n, although we could this is just a definition, it just can be pulled out front. And let me note that this, so we're summing over all the distances squared in the sphere packing. We're summing over the lattice and over the unit cell. This is just every possible pair of spheres in the packing. What I want to point out is that this thing that's showing up here showed up earlier as the character of the U1 to the C Kern algebra, right? This was the character of that Kern algebra was an exponential over eta to the 2C. So this thing that's showing up here is chi delta for U1 to the C times U1 to the C with the identification n is equal to 2C. And delta is equal to a half of this distance squared. So what we'd like to write down is a crossing equation for this sphere packing partition function. And that crossing equation comes from Poisson summation. So the Poisson summation formula says that if we sum this function over a lattice, this is equal to summing its Fourier transform over the dual lattice. The relevant Fourier transform here is e to the I pi tau x squared, which Fourier transforms to minus I tau.
Tom, can I ask something? I'm sorry, I'm confused about that formula. You said ui is just the big n vectors, so aren't you supposed to like multiply them by integers to, I don't know, in your current previous notation, u, big u, just had big n vectors, a finite number.
Yes.
So you're not summing over all pairwise points, you're like summing over nearest neighbors or something.
I've divided by the volume of space, effectively. So I've required that one of my, so we have a unit cell that maybe looks like this, let's say. And we're tiling that over all of space. I want to sum over all pairs, but I don't want to get infinity from the volume of space, so I've required one of my spheres to sit in this unit cell here, and then I'm summing over all correlations between two spheres with the condition that one of them sits in this cell here.
Why aren't you summing over all nearest neighbors? That's what I understood. Oh, okay, fine. I understood. Thanks.
So the Fourier transform of a Gaussian is just a Gaussian with a prefactor, so this is e to the minus I pi x squared over tau. And if we plug that Fourier transform into here and do the Poisson sum, this says that the sphere packing partition function is equal to 1 over n. This comes from a 1 over volume factor in the Poisson formula times the sum over the dual lattice of e to the minus I pi over tau k squared over eta of minus 1 over tau to the n times some phase factors that come from, so we're doing, this is the sum over the lattice, so we have to Fourier transform this whole piece here, and there are these phase factors that come in, so the Fourier transform just gives you a factor of e to the ik dot uj summed over uj mod squared. The whole purpose of sticking in this eta function was just to absorb these extra I taus that come in the Fourier transform of the Gaussian. Okay, so the S transform of the eta function just cancels off these factors that would have been there if I hadn't stuck in that eta function.
Okay, so the thing to notice here is that now this thing is chi delta
of minus 1 over tau. So by doing the Fourier transform, we've just converted the U1 character to its dual.
So the conclusion is that this partition function we've defined can be written two different ways. It can be written as a sum of the U1 characters. I've just rewritten the partition function in the first format. Or we can write it in this dual format, which takes the form sum over a different set of deltas with a different set of degeneracies, rho tilde, of the dual character I minus 1 over tau. This almost looks like a bootstrap situation. It's a little bit more general than the one we usually talk about because of these extra phase factors that came in when we did the Fourier transform. So it doesn't look like our original modular invariance equation. It has a different sum on the two sides. And rho delta here on the left is different from rho tilde delta tilde here on the right. But the important thing is that the thing that shows up on the right is still positive. The fact that it's positive basically allows all of the technology of the functional bootstrap to carry over to this generalized problem. So now, to derive bounds on sphere packing, remember that our goal in the sphere packing problem is to maximize the density. And since we've fixed our lattice volume, this means maximizing the radius of the sphere that you can assign to this configuration while avoiding overlaps. But that just means maximizing the shortest distance, so we're trying to maximize delta 1 subject to this Poisson resummation crossing equation. So now this really looks like a bootstrap problem. And we can do the same thing we did in modular bootstrap, which is to act with functionals on both sides of this equation. So when we act with functionals, we're going to get a linear programming problem that's very similar to the linear programming problem that you get in the usual functional bootstrap. And this is exactly the, so let me write that equation. So we have a bootstrap problem that looks like this. Where f is the output of our functional. So this gives us our linear programming problem, and we can now find functions f subject to certain positivity properties to derive bounds on delta 1, and therefore on the density of all possible sphere packings in Rn.
This is exactly what was implemented by Cohn and Elkies in 2003. Okay, so they didn't quite say it the way that I've phrased it. They didn't write the partition function. And as far as I can tell, they don't think of this as acting with linear functionals. But they wrote exactly this equation. So their starting point, which you can view this as Poisson resummation of the function f. So their starting point was just to write down this equation on the left, do the Poisson resummation, and you get this equation, you get this equality, and then they use this to derive bounds. The only difference is that since you have different degeneracies appearing in the two channels, you have to impose positivity conditions on both f and this is supposed to be f hat, yeah. So this is the Fourier transform of f. So since you have these two different degeneracies, you have to do a linear programming problem where you impose constraints on the positivity of both f and on its Fourier transform. Whereas usually we just have the difference of f minus f hat, and we impose positivity on that. So the positivity condition is slightly different, but otherwise this is really identical. And so they get this linear programming problem, which you can then analyze numerically. And this was done by Cohn and Elkies in the original paper that derived this linear programming problem in 2003. They tried to do it analytically, but were only able to find the analytic functional for the trivial case of one-dimensional sphere packings, so sphere packings on the log. So the higher dimensional sphere packings they did numerically in a way that's similar to what we do in Bootstrap with linear programming, and I'm going to sketch the results that they got. So I'm going to plot in various dimensions the log of the sphere packing density. So they ran this numerics, and they got some curve that looks like this. Okay, and this is an upper bound on the density of sphere packings. So it means the allowed sphere packings all have to lie below this bound. Now you can compare this to the actual sphere packings that are known. In low dimensions, as I said, we know some of the answers, and people have very good guesses for some of the other dimensions. But there are candidates in low dimensions, so like at n equals 2 is the triangular lattice, and that, okay. That sits right on the curve of Cohn and Elkies. Whereby sits right on the curve, I mean up to numerical precision. Okay, so up to some number of decimal places, this density of the A2 lattice sits exactly on the curve that they got numerically. If you go in higher dimensions, then this is no longer true. So like in three dimensions, we know the answer from Hale's proof is that FCC density, but that sits below the curve. And you can keep plotting this for various dimensions. I don't know exactly what it looks like, but it sort of goes down like this until you get to dimension 8, when it jumps back up and sits right on the curve again. You keep going, okay, so it goes down, and then it jumps back up at 24. Okay, so there are three interesting places where the numerical bound seems to meet, to very high precision, seems to meet the density of the best known sphere packing. In this case, it's meeting the density of the E8 lattice, and in this case, it's meeting the density of the Leech lattice. So Cohn and Elkies did this numerically, and they conjectured the existence of some magic functions, what in Bootstrap we would call extremal functionals, but they call them magic functions. Okay, so they conjectured the existence of magic functions which would solve the sphere packing problem in dimensions 2, 8, and 24. By the way, it's clear from this picture, so like, for example, we know that this point here is optimal, but it's not meeting the bound. So it's clear from this picture that there are lots of other constraints on sphere packing that are not being accounted for by the Cohn-Elkies linear programming problem. I think this is, at least qualitatively, sort of analogous to the problem in conformal bootstrap. We've taken one particular constraint on conformal field theories, but there are lots of other constraints. There's crossing with spin, sorry, there's modular invariance with spin, there's the operator algebra of the full-blown conformal field theory, so there are lots of other constraints. And similarly, in sphere packing, there isn't really a guarantee that this one constraint is going to saturate the best sphere packing. It just happens to saturate in dimensions 2, 8, and 24. So that was the situation after the Cohn-Elkies problem, that basically we knew numerically that these were optimal, but there was no proof. What Wiazowska did in her 2016 paper was she found the magic function. Or E8, and using those same techniques with collaborators found the magic function for the Leech lattice that proves that this is optimal. So I'm not sure, I may come back and write the actual functional at the end if I have time, but let me just briefly say where it came from. So what she did is she wrote an ansatz that had the right zeros. Okay, so just as in bootstrap, we know that the extremal functionals have zeros at the spectrum of the actual theory that you're ultimately bootstrapping. And the same thing happens in sphere packing, that the magic function has zeros at the spectrum of the E8 lattice. So she wrote an ansatz with the correct zeros, and then was able to turn that ansatz into a full-blown magic function by requiring that it have the correct format to come from the Cohn-Elkies problem. So that involves writing this ansatz and then designing a quasi-modular form with the correct properties. Maybe I'll come back to that at the end if I have time, or you can ask me after. Okay, so it's clear that this is at least vaguely closely related to the conformal bootstrap problem that we started with, the modular bootstrap problem that we started with, but what is the exact relation? So the claim is that this Cohn-Elkies linear programming bounds on sphere packing are exactly equivalent to the U1 to the C modular bootstrap. With this identification n equals 2c. In particular, the formula is that the density of sphere packings in Rn is bounded by pi over 2 to the c over gamma of c plus 1 times delta 1 of c to the c. So the statement is that if you run modular bootstrap, however you like to do modular bootstrap, run this in STPB numerically, however, you run modular bootstrap, you constrain the spectrum of the first operator, you constrain the dimension of the first operator, and you find some exclusion plot, then if you plug it into this formula, you get the Cohn-Elkies. You get the Cohn-Elkies curve. So these problems are exactly equivalent for chiral algebra U1 to the C. That's not quite obvious from the way I explain this, because of the fact that it wasn't exactly the U1 to the U1 bootstrap problem. It had this different dimension, different density over here. But what turns out is that you can separate this bootstrap problem into an odd part and an even part. One of them looks exactly like the ordinary bootstrap, and there's an additional one. It turns out that once you've solved the ordinary part, where rho is equal to rho tilde, the other one is just solved for free. Okay, so that the setup doesn't look quite identical, but the bounds you get are identical. And so we literally have bounds from the bootstrap problem on the density of sphere packets. So that's a connection to the to this bootstrap problem with the larger Cairo algebra. There's also a close connection to the Virasoro bootstrap, the ordinary Virasoro bootstrap. And the reason there's a connection is that basically, once you have a functional f, you can apply that functional to various bootstrap problems. And in this case, you can take the same functionals that are applied to the U1 bootstrap and apply those functionals to the Virasoro bootstrap. In fact, this connects not just to the U1 bootstrap, but to the ordinary Virasoro one. To explain this, I need to review some work on constructing functionals that's been done by Dalmiel and Miguel. And this will also get us that C over 8 bound that I mentioned at the beginning. So Dalmiel and Miguel studied the problem of finding extremal functionals for 1D correlators. You can think of these as the correlation functions of a one-dimensional CFT, or you can think of this as the restriction of the ordinary CFT to the line z equals z bar. So these are correlation functions that have an SL2, they just have an SL2 conformal symmetry, just an SL2 piece of conformal symmetry. And so they constructed functionals that act on the SL2 conformal blocks. And they found extremal functionals that have the spectrum, or solve exactly the bootstrap problem corresponding to the one-dimensional generalized free Fermi. So by finding these functionals, they proved that the maximal gap in the one-dimensional correlator problem is the gap of the generalized free fermion. So this proves that the gap in general in this SL2 correlator problem is less than or equal to 2 delta psi plus 1, which is the gap of the generalized free fermion. So the generalized free fermion theory is labeled by external dimension delta psi. So what they proved is that given delta psi, the dimension of the first exchange has to be below 2 delta psi plus 1. Okay? So this was for the one-dimensional SL2 correlator problem. But now we want to apply the same functional to the modular bootstrap. Fortunately, you can do this because you can view the partition function in 2 dimensions as a correlator schematically. This partition function in 2 dimensions can be viewed as a 4-point correlation function of twist operators, which convert the modular problem to the correlator problem.
The dictionary for this conversion is that you take z, the cross ratio of the correlator, and set that equal to theta 2 of tau to the fourth over theta 3 of tau to the fourth. You take the dimension of the operator, which in this case is this twist operator, and set that equal to c over 8. And then what happens is that the partition function maps to this four-point correlation function. And at the level of individual characters, what happens is that the SL2 blocks of the correlator problem map to a sum of blocks of characters for the torus problem. Okay, so this last part is important that it's not the bootstrap problems are not going to end up being exactly identical because the SL2 symmetry does not map to the U1 symmetry. The SL2 characters are bigger and include a bunch of U1 contributions, U1 character contributions to the partition function. So what we did is to take this functional of the SL2 problem and map it to a functional on the modular problem. And after doing this map, they're both true, but this one is, in this case, the sum is positive. It's the other way around? I always get this mixed up. Okay, well they're both true. It won't matter. Yeah. We can decompose it. We could do this either way. So in the correlator problem, we had this gap 2 delta psi plus 1. Now we can apply the same functional to the characters. And if we go through that dictionary over there for the modular problem, we apply this functional to the chi delta of taus. And this gives this bound, the gap delta 1, is bounded by c over 8 plus a half. So that's where the bound comes from that I quoted at the beginning. This the discussion that I just gave doesn't care whether you're doing the U1 problem or the Virasoro problem. So this is for both Virasoro and U1 to the C. So a couple of comments about this. First of all, at c equals 4 and c equals 12, this procedure gives back exactly the functional, the magic function that was written down by Wiazowska. Okay, so this, I think, is pretty remarkable because for c equals 4 and c equals 12, these functionals were written down by Dalmil in 2016 for the SL2 correlator problem.
just a couple months after Wiazowska had written down the functionals for the sphere packing problem, this was done completely independently. But after you do this elliptic map from the plane to the torus, this is just exactly the same function. Secondly, for C not equal to 4 and 12, the bounds that you get from this are not optimal bounds. And that's a little confusing at first because they found the optimal functional for the SL2 problem in one dimension. So why aren't we getting optimal functionals when we lift this to a modular bootstrap functional? And the answer to that is this rearrangement of characters that I had on the board, where they mix up when you go from the 1D problem to the bootstrap problem. And so what happens is that the vacuum character for the one problem is not the same as the vacuum character for the other. And if you apply this functional to the vacuum, then you actually find that it's not zero. It's actually positive for C less than 4 or greater than 12. The optimal functional would just be zero on the whole spectrum of the theory. So it would be zero everywhere, including on the vacuum. This functional, since it's not zero in the vacuum, it gives a true bound, but not an optimal bound, away from the special points that were considered in the sphere packing problem. If I plot this functional, it looks something like this. So it's not zero on vacuum, and then it has GAC C over 8 plus a half. Since it's not optimal, you can imagine trying to fix up this functional by adding something that sends this intercept down and shrinks the gap a little bit. And you can do that as well using this basis of functionals that was constructed by Dalmiel and Miguel. And this can also be done analytically and gives a slightly stronger bound, which is something like delta 1 less than about C over 8.5. So ultimately, the bound is this stronger one. It's just a slight variant of the C over 8 bound. Good question? It is, yes. Well, we didn't write one. I suppose you could do this procedure in reverse and write a slightly weaker bound for a true but slightly weaker bound between 4 and 12. I don't think we actually have done that, though, but I think you could do that. Okay, sorry. For C equals 4 and 12, you get the optimal bound agrees with the sphere packing. For C less than 4 or bigger than 12, you get a bound, but it's not optimal. For C between 4 and 12, you don't get an allowed bound. You have to work harder to get a bound. So maybe since it's 11, I'm going to stop here. You can ask me about the functional if you want afterward. Let me just end with a couple of comments. First of all, this Kohn-Elkies method is just one of many bootstrap methods that appear in the math literature. Okay, so this didn't start with sphere packing and Kohn-Elkies in 2003. This actually started with a paper of So if you trace this back, this use of linear programming to constrain problems like this goes back to a paper of Del Sarte in 1972 and has been applied all over the place in math and computer science. So I think if we dig into this literature, we'll find all sorts of insights that we can apply to the conformal bootstrap. And you know, they've been thinking about this problem from a different angle for a very long time, and they have lots of clever techniques for doing things like constructing functionals and analyzing exactly these sorts of bootstrap equations that we've been analyzing. The work of Del Sarte actually goes back to a problem in coding theory and information theory. So maybe I'll just briefly tell you what that is. So the relation to coding theory is the following. Suppose you want to send a message through a noisy channel. You encode that message in bits. You have some set of code words that encode your message. So if you take a code word and you send it through a noisy channel, then it might get modified a little bit, okay? But you want the person who receives it to be able to guess what you intended to send. Okay, so when you construct a code, it's a lot like a packing problem. When you construct a code, you need to pick a bunch of vectors. The person who receives your message will try to decode your message by matching it to the nearest code word. So what you're trying to do when you construct a code is to construct a bunch of points you have some space of allowed messages. You're trying to construct a bunch of points in that space with as many points as possible with none of them too close to each other. Okay, so the problem of constructing codes is very analogous to the problem of sphere packing and the problem of modular bootstrap. So people have been writing down crossing equations for coding theory since 1972, and even you can find in computer science textbooks something that looks almost identical to the crossing equation that we analyze in conformal field theory, although the objects that are showing up there are a little bit different. Okay, and I'll stop here. Thanks.
If I write the particular function that involves triples of spheres, I could imagine like sum over e to the xij squared tau 1, e to the xjk squared tau 2, e to the ki squared tau 3. Do you get constraints that are independent from the Cohen-Elkies equation?
Yes, you do. And those constraints have never appeared in a publication, as far as I can tell. They have been written down and applied to many of these other problems, like encoding theory and other variants of the bootstrap. It seems that people, mathematicians, have applied them to sphere packing, but just haven't published them because they can't figure out what the bounds mean. But there are statements in the literature that gives stronger bounds and that they have a whole sequence of additional constraints that they can impose and study numerically.
Like spherical codes.
Yes, they've been applied to spherical codes, which I guess could be used to infer constraints on sphere packings. But never directly, like in this Cohen-Elkies language, the Cohen-Elkies theorem has never been extended to these higher point functions, but certainly could be.
Anything else?